Every episode of The Gauge is brought to you by Bill Fick Ford and the WCRA
and Lonesome Rider Coffee.
Guys, Bill Fick Ford is the number one Super Duty dealer in the country for the fourth year in a row. You guys have heard me rant and rave about Bill Fick Ford for the absolute best buying experience in the car industry, truck industry. Bill Fick Ford's the place to go. I bet you remember the old ad where I said I was getting a new Super Duty. Well, here's the keys for that. Bill Fick Ford delivers, guys. No bull discounts, no bull interest rates, the best buying experience you can get. And if you are not local to Huntsville or the Houston area, he'll deliver it to you just like he did to me. Bill Fick Ford. If I say, who wants to be a millionaire? Would anybody not put their hand up? Of course not, especially in rodeo. Well, thanks to the WCRA, the dream of a $1 million purse has finally come true. You can win $1 million by nominating your rides and runs and earning points with the WCRA. Through the Triple Crown of Rodeo, the WCRA will award a $1 million cash prize to any athlete or collection of athletes who wins first place in any three consecutive WCRA major rodeos. $1 million up for grabs, which is pretty much unheard of. Rodeo Corpus Christi will be the very first stop in the 2021 Triple Crown of Rodeo. The event will pay over $540,000. Yes, I said it, $545,000, and will be held on May 6th through May 9th. There will be zero entry fees. That's right. You don't even have to pay to enter this rodeo. The only thing you have to do to qualify for the Triple Crown of Rodeo event is by nominating your rides or runs with the WCRA. Here's the common misconception with the WCRA. It's just for the pros, for the elites. Well, if you can hang with these people, but maybe you don't want to commit to pro rodeo. I get it. It's a big commitment. The WCRA is made for people like you because you can enter these events, nominate your rodeos, and win crazy money, just like Rodeo Corpus Christi and this $1 million we keep talking about. To learn more, just visit triplecrownofrodeo.com. Again, that's triplecrownofrodeo.com to see how you can earn a spot at Rodeo Corpus Christi and possibly be the rodeo's next millionaire. Pow! Guys, if you're like me, you are literally running your entire life off of coffee. One thing I've learned is that I've become a coffee snob, and I'm very picky about where I get my coffee and what I drink. Can't just drink any old coffee. Lonesome Rider Coffee is one of the few out there who truly produces a great product. They are a family-owned and operated, veteran-owned and operated business. They do great things in their community. They've got charity partners where they donate 25% of their proceeds to that charity. They do branded products with each of these charitable partners, and they receive 25% of the donations from the proceeds of that coffee. Guys, they're great. Lonesome Rider Coffee has some of the freshest and best coffee I've ever had, and it can be delivered directly to your mailbox. And don't forget to go to lonesomeridercoffee.com February 8th through the 15th to get their Valentine's Day promotion. Use the coupon code LONESOMELOVE at checkout for that nice little discount.
This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradu.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado. This is The Gauge, and I am Chance Conrado. On this episode of the podcast, we have got the 12-time Wrangler National Finals bullfighter, 10-time PRCA bullfighter of the year, CrossFit madman, Dusty Tuckness. We just have a nice, casual Sunday afternoon conversation over coffee, and I was drinking a Rockstar energy drink, but he was kind enough to swing by on his way home from Odessa, so we had a nice little recording, and I think Dusty's awesome. He's one of those great, wholesome dudes that everybody should pay attention to. Check it out. Okay, nice. That was a little long-winded for setup there, Ty.
Well, Sunday. We had to adjust.
I like what you do with your hair today. It's like,
that's why I've been doing my hair.
Oh, I didn't notice it until now.
Well, that tells me a lot.
Yeah, it probably does. You're probably right. Well, thanks for swinging by on your way home there, Dusty. It wasn't a long trip, but not for a rodeo person anyway.
Some people might think four hours is a long way. Texas, 4.5 hours, yeah. Pretty easy.
Yeah, yeah. What was it? What was Odessa like this year?
It was a little different. The biggest thing that was different, it wasn't so much that the craziness, but they were just limited to 30% of capacity each night. Mm. And so that was the biggest impact, I think, just overall. But the rodeo and behind the scenes and everything, it was kind of felt like normal again. So it was good to be rodeoing the first part of the year.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a decent little break after the NFR, but I'm real interested in kind of what your opinion, you were telling me what it was like for you at the NFR, mm-hmm. different, and what your opinion was of the whole setup at Globe Life for, you know, for bull riding in specific.
Yeah, so, you know, bringing the NFR this year to Texas and Globe Life, like, it was pretty neat. It was a historic year. I mean, anybody who was a part of it, production side, the contestants or personnel, it's pretty neat to be a part of that for sure, and it was different. It was definitely a lot different. Just the atmosphere, you know, what we could do, what we couldn't do. You know, a lot of times when we're out in Vegas, it's, you know, your autographs, meetings. I mean, you're busy all day, every day. And this year, you know, we didn't really have any autographs or anything. So we kind of, in a sense, kind of stayed to our bubble and in our group of people each and every night. But the arena itself was pretty neat. It reminded me a lot like a Rodeo Houston, just a really big arena, a really big atmosphere. And ultimately, I mean, hats off to Glenn Allen and the PRSA and Globe Life and everybody for pretty much pulling off the NFR in about 80 days. So, but the work that we had to do in the arena, it didn't really change. A lot of times in bulls, the 100 bulls that get selected, you know, they've got a set pattern. And so it doesn't matter if we're in a small arena or large arena. Our job is the same each and every time.
Right, yeah. I mean, one of probably the most important job for bull riding, and I mean, I've always been a timed event guy, but lately, I mean, I've got into bull riding so much more than I really ever have. I mean, when you're a timed event person, right, it's like if you rope and then, like, let's say your sister's, like, mine barrel race. It's like as soon as the barrels are done, it's like we're pulling out. So I never watched the bull riding, and but now kind of from this different perspective, I get to watch it. I mean, dude, NFR Arlington, like, that was some of the best bull riding I've actually watched. It was just, it was so fun to watch from the first few nights to the end what was going to happen. I mean, Stetson and those young guys, it was nuts.
Oh, yeah. And I say it almost, I know I've said it two or three times at Vegas, like, that's the best bull riding I've ever seen. But this year, I think what was really cool was the matchups and that it literally came down to the very last bull. You know, yep. For the last 6 years, you know, Sage has pretty much dominated. You know, and this year he had battled with different injuries and the pandemic and everything. And then this year, you know, Stetson Wright, I think, is going to be a player for a long time, especially in the all-around world title. But, you know, Colton or Fitzlin, he come in there, he wins the average, you know, rookie yep. guy. And Ty Wallace, who's a veteran that, you know, was right there. Then Stetson, it come down to Ty and Stetson.
Yeah.
And I mean, even Kai Hamilton, you know, made a big push. And it was just pretty awesome seeing the atmosphere that they brought to Globe Life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so funny because Kai and Colton were on this show like at the beginning of the season, or when it kind of kicked off in the summer, like in June, and they were like all timid and just getting to see those dudes go from that to the swagger that they had in the NFR, and kind of those dudes said they were gonna do exactly what they did, and when people like, hey, I'm gonna do this and this, and this is my goal, and then they go out there and freaking do it, especially in a sport like bull riding, dude, it's awesome to see that.
Oh yeah, and it's you know there was. Everybody's talking about the rookie rush, the finals and that. Well, everybody kind of got a taste of the rookie rush in a sense this year because it's a different arena, different setup, different schedules, you know, different protocol and everything. So everybody kind of, you know, come in on an even playing field. And it was just good watching all the way around, even from the time events, because the barriers to the patterns were all different, all bigger. You know, seeing horse change-ups, you've seen people running the barrier or holding back a little bit. And then obviously the horses in a bigger arena, you know, they're going to circle a little wider. They're not going to get caught up in the fence. So I think overall it was a pretty neat experience and cool to be a part of.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We were super thankful to be a part of it and kind of just go through it every single night. But it's funny because we were at the PBR World Finals and all that too. And, I mean, I like PBR now a lot, but for some reason the NFR, it felt more entertaining than the PBR. And usually it's kind of like, the PBR has a one-up on the entertainment factor, but at least in the bull riding, it was the best bull riding I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. On the production side of things, every finals that I've been a part of, I think is pretty tough to beat. You know, because each and every night they're trying to do something new and trying to spice things up, and it's cool to kind of wait and see what the openings are going to be or how they finish tonight. So they're always stepping their game up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the way they pulled it off and just that whole atmosphere. I mean, we'll never get to see that again because ain't no way the NFR is coming to Texas. It just, in the arena, it was great. Outside the arena, it didn't work that great. Like, Cowboy Christmas was super underwhelming. How could it not be? It's Fort Worth, and it's just, you can't be Vegas, really.
Yeah, And everybody's got their 2 cents they want to put into it. Ultimately, I'm a fan of the sport. So wherever it goes, and if I get to be a part of it, you know, I'm going to support it. But being at Vegas for, you know, 11 different times, it's pretty tough to beat that atmosphere. But hats off to Arlington and them for pulling it off.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, and that kind of goes on to the next thing I was wondering. I mean, yeah, 12 times, you know, bullfighting at the NFR, that's a big accomplishment. What did you get, like, bullfighter of the year, like 10 of those 12 times or something like that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it's been a pretty blessed career, and something I look back on when I was a kid and looking where I'm at now, like, man, what'd I do to deserve this, you know?
Right. Well, it's interesting, right? Because, I mean, the bullfighters have always been this important piece, right? It's like, if you talk to bull riders, it's like, dude, some of these guys have saved our lives. You guys mm-hmm. have snatched dudes out of literally death's arms on more than one occasion. I mean, we've seen it a lot if you pay attention to the sport. Mm-hmm. And you guys get yourself in there, put yourself in harm's way, and you're the first bullfighter we've had on the show, actually. But it's just really interesting the way you guys, it's evolved as its own sport, right? The BFO stuff, mm-hmm. you're wearing that hat. And dude, I mean, people are literally training and aspiring to be bullfighters. And talk to a lot of announcers and things like that, and there's like people now aspiring to be announcers, but it just kind of speaks to the evolution of the sport. Mm-hmm. I mean, when did you think that, hey, I want to be a bullfighter, and how did that come to you as a career opportunity? Because, I mean, a lot of people wouldn't even understand.
Yeah, for me, it was pretty simple, I guess. I grew up into the rodeo world. My dad fought bulls, and he works the barrel still to this day, and my mom is involved in rodeo. So at a young age, I was always kind of around it, and, you know, I was always drawn to it. You know, God, I feel it was part of his plan for my life, and you know, there was kind of a 4 or 5 years there where I wasn't too involved in it, but it was probably in my junior high years. My dad, you know, reached out to me, and it's like, hey, you want to go rodeo with me for the summer? And, you know, I grew up in a small town in Idaho, and I never really left Idaho until probably in high school, and I was like, heck yeah, I want to go, you know, thinking I'm going to go see the world. Well, pretty much all I did was go to Montana for the summer. You know, I was maybe 6 hours from the house.
That doesn't look a whole lot different than Idaho.
No, but shoot, at a young age and never traveled much, I was like, man, I'm out seeing the world. I'm doing it. And, man, it just kind of got a hold of me at a young age. And, shoot, never looked back. So,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's one of the more, like, if you like traditional sports, right, or, like, athletics, it's one of those really athletic pursuits, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as far as being able to move and have control of your body and things like that. It's a little different than the other rodeo sports, right? I mean, because you're using your body more than, you know, at least traditionally, like another sport.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, like barrack riding, even bull riding, bronc riding. I mean, everybody's using their body and their functional movements to a certain point. But for us, like, you know, our heart rate's up, it's down. You know, we're not running a 10 second match or a 15 second barrel pattern or an 8 second clock. You know, we might be out in that arena 30 minutes to an hour, you know, or maybe even 2 hours if it's just a bull riding. So, you know, the fitness side of things, like I really own in on that a lot. Like, I think that's a big thing you can take to the table, because the more you can prepare for yourself for whatever situation, I always say, you know, prepare for the worst, hope for the best. So if I can prepare myself that the absolute worst thing that could possibly happen, then when I get in that situation, that's just one less thing I got to worry about, and I just go in and trust my fundamentals and my training and go out and have fun.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I mean. It's like there's a way you prepare for those other sports in rodeo, but, like, if you're a bullfighter, you can't do the J.B. Mooney thing where you're just a born badass, and you got to train your ass off. I mean, if you get tired, then you're going to get hurt.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had it happen to me in my young, I guess I say my young career, you know, early on, where I wasn't quite in the good shape that I thought I was, and I've had my legs give out from me. And I remember I was in Ada, Oklahoma at the bullfight that Rex Dunn puts on, and I told myself that day, I'm never going to let that happen again. And I haven't, you know, just, you know, what I do outside of the arena is going to prepare me for what I do in that arena. And, you know, through the nutrition and the different workouts and training regimens, like, I think that's, it helps you physically, but it also helps you mentally, because if you can put yourself through workouts and nutrition and be consistent and be disciplined outside of the arena, when you get in that arena, when you get on that competition floor, there's another level of you that rises up. So if you can beat that demon before you even step in that arena, when you get in that arena, shoot, you're just ready to go have fun.
Yeah, no doubt. Did you play other sports?
Yeah, yeah. So growing up, I played – you know, baseball when I was really young, and then I wrestled for a couple years in junior high, and then played basketball and football for years. I was actually going to go to college for football until my recruiting coach told me that if they caught me fighting bulls, they'd pull my scholarship.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So you ran away from that?
Pretty much. Just kind of chose the rodeo route, and it's been a blessing ever since.
I mean, it worked out for you. A lot of people choose rodeo, and it doesn't work out.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially in a smaller thing like bullfighting. But, I mean, what year did you get in it, like in it pro rodeo-wise?
I got my card in 2006.
So it's been a minute.
Yeah, we've had it for a few years now. And, man, it's just crazy when I reflect and look back on what I've been through or the rodeos that I've got to work. You know, it's just been pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine, like, from your side of it, it's, I mean, now there's so much light on it, but back in like 2006 and onward to, I mean, just a few years ago, it was, didn't have as much shine on it as it does now, probably, right? The bullfighting side.
Oh, for sure. You know, with the development of the different, you know, BFO and all these other freestyle associations and the sport itself is getting recognized what I always knew it could. You know, you're starting to see them. You're not just seeing them as a party clown, you know, out there just entertaining or, you know, kind of in the way. You're starting to see, you know, rodeo bullfighters as true athletes and the training that goes into it and the camps that they go to, the school and the time that these guys are putting in. It's pretty awesome to see and be a part of it. So, yeah, it's really grown. And, you know, it's cool when you go to a rodeo and a lot of people come up to you and be like, yeah, I watch the bull riding, but I really watch what you guys do after. When before it was like, oh, the guy bucked off, you know, let's go home.
Right.
You know, so it's cool. It's getting a spotlight and people are really starting to see what we actually do for a living.
Yeah. And so here's another question, right? So what do you think is the key factor that actually helped highlight bullfighting as a sport and elevate it to where it is? I mean, what specific organization do you think it was? The BFO? Do you think it was the PBR? What do you think it was that kind of put it on the platform that it's starting to grow to? Maybe social media? I mean, mm-hmm. like, if you look at Cody Webster's or even yours, like, you get to see you guys doing all these things on, like, Instagram, preparing training, big platforms for rodeo people. I mean, it's got to be something specific, though, that maybe you think took it there.
Man, I think it's always kind of been growing a little bit, just like with anything else in rodeo or professional sport. But I think the thing that really kind of really started drawing a light to it was the BFO. And why I say that is, you know, in I think it was 2015, 2016, you know, about 15 of us guys that were consistently going to freestyles, consistently go to rodeos, kind of just grouped up together and, you know, were the pioneers of it and started putting content of freestyle, not just, you know, your match that you did that night, but, you know, behind the scenes with our sessions and our workouts, and then start putting schools. So obviously, yeah, social media had a big part of that, because now, you know, what you do right then could, you know, thousands of people could see it pretty quick if you put it on there, and that helped grow the sport, started getting people interested in it. You know, in the sport of rodeo, you know, it's easy. You know, before, I remember, you know, first starting out, you know, everybody had the camcorder. You know, and it took, exactly. It might take 3 or 4 days before you actually watch it. But now it's all on phones and different digital stuff to where, you know, I can't keep anything from my mom now. So when I get run over, wrecked out or whatever, she knows really before I know. So I think
Dusty,
that's
are you okay?
Pretty much.
I don't know what your mom's like. I probably just totally disrespect her.
No, she was like that for a while, you know, but now she's pretty content with, she knows what I'm doing, and shoot, half the time now she's gotten to know a lot of my rodeo buddies
really
good now. So it's like, hey, how was it tonight, son? And I'm like, man, I got wrecked out. I'm hurt pretty bad. Oh, you all right? Yeah. How's everybody else doing? Like, shoot, mom.
Hey, I'm hey, your I'm kid. Going to the hospital. I'm your flesh and blood, lady.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, it's good. So.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, kind of circling back, I mean, you're wearing the Rogue. I see that you do a lot of CrossFit style stuff. I mean, does that seem to be the best, you know? I mean, obviously you played football at a higher level. I did too. We have that in common. We like kind of turned away from football, but mm-hmm. Is that kind of, did you look at those type of things to structure the workouts? I mean, because it's very similar as far as the preparation probably, right?
Yeah, so for me, I really didn't get into like the functional CrossFit training until about 2.5-3 years ago. I was always big into like working out, you know, after I went from high school to college, you know, kind of lived the college life a little bit, and it caught up to me, and I was like, man, I need to start working out and eating right. And I didn't know anything about really nutrition or fitness other than I'd get on the treadmill and run for an hour and lift a few dumbbells, and kind of did that for a while and started getting to the like P90Xs and then Sanities and stuff like that. And I finally had some buddies probably 4 or 5 years ago. They were talking about this CrossFit stuff, and it kind of intrigued me a little bit and kind of intimidated me a little bit too.
It's intimidating, you know, for sure.
If you've never been to a gym, you're like, man, they're just going to torture me. They're just going to kill me off. Well, the workouts, yeah, are high intensity, you know, consistently varied functional movements. But the cool thing about the communities of CrossFit gyms and everything, like, it's like a family. So when you go in there and they put up a workout and you're like, man, I can't do muscle-ups. Well, there's a modified version for it to where you can work up.
Put the band up and that whole deal, yeah.
Yeah, so I started looking into CrossFit. I did it for about a year, year and a half. Really started liking it, just the whole concept of it, just the full range of motion, the body functions, what God made our body to do in the first place. And it was last October I went and I took a course and got my CrossFit Level 1 trainers and then just kind of been hooked on it, you know, helping other athletes out and just the whole science behind it, program and everything, I just really love. And not only for myself, but, you know, lending a hand to these other athletes, you know, showing proper ways to get fit and get in shape. Because a lot of people, even to this day, is like, hey, I need to lose weight. I'm going to run and I'm going to bike. Well, that's good. You'll build up your endurance to a point, but are you doing any type of interval training or progressive overload? Because, you know, as well as I do, you get to a certain point, you plateau if you don't change things up. With CrossFit and functional training, you're always changing things up and you're always adding weight, lower reps, or shortening your time or lengthening your time or doing a row or swimming or gymnastics. So the hopper effect, you know, whatever you pull out of the hopper, you might not like that workout or that bull per se, but you know you prepared yourself enough that you can do it.
No, absolutely. And that's what I love seeing now, kind of the modern cowboys, and I've said this a lot of times, but we haven't really talked about it lately on the show, is watching it go from like a cowboy, which is always there, right? A cowboy mm-hmm. is just a way of being, I think, but rodeo's an athletic pursuit now, and you're getting to see like guys like Tim O'Connell or all these PBR guys are just in crazy great shape, mm-hmm. and you guys are in great shape, and that's probably my favorite thing about modern rough stock is it's not that, you know, what it used to be like, right? You know, yeah. Time to people say, hey, we're time to these. We don't talk to the roughies. Like, dude, the rough stock guys, they're like modern day gladiators right now. I mean, it's very similar, like a UFC fighter, a CrossFit athlete, things like that, how great of shape you're in, which to me is like, that's like probably my second passion is fitness, very similar to you. Mm-hmm. And it's, I just think it's important. And kind of bouncing back, now we're not going to talk about rodeo because we got a like mind in the fitness thing. And there's just not a lot of people in the rodeo world who give enough craps about the fitness side of things, and nobody wants to talk about it. So
yeah.
It makes you uncomfortable if you're like, you know, when you're the guy who sits at the table and you're like, no, hey, please don't put any butter on that. You know, yeah. People are always like,
is that okay. My macros?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm that guy. So people don't like that, especially when you're in the rodeo crowd, everybody's just eating whatever they want. But when did you kind of figure out what a big part nutrition plays? Cause That's like the number one thing, right? If people ask you, if you're a fit guy, what happens is people always ask you stuff, right? And you mm-hmm. get that all the time. You're a big fit guy. And, you know, well, how do you do it? How do you do this? And it's like, it all starts with what you put in your freaking mouth, dude.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You cannot outwork the diet. You just can't.
No, I've tried.
Yeah.
And you can't. I mean, and the thing about, like you said, what you put in is what you're going to get out. I mean, just simple stuff. You know, think about a car or a diesel truck. You're not going to put gas in a diesel or diesel in a gas car or truck, and same with our bodies. And when I really started seeing that transition of kind of recognizing, you know, good nutrition, you know, whole foods and that, and the benefits it gave to my body, not only did it help me trim the unwanted weight, but it ultimately made me feel better. And the other turning point that really made me realize that, a buddy of mine, Tilden Hooper, we was in Cheyenne a couple years ago, and he came over and he was using my recovery boots, and we just got to talking and just on the nutrition and stuff. And he's like, man, Tuck, I'm not going to lie. I didn't realize how bad I felt until I started changing up what I put in my body and realized, holy crap, I feel so much better now. And it's like I said, it's not just trimming the weight. It's, you know, your performance.
Yeah, that's just a side effect.
Yeah, yeah. It's so, and when people come up to me and be like, hey, man, I want to get in shape. I want to lose some weight. First thing I ask them is, what are your goals? What are you trying to get out of this? Are you just wanting to lose weight? Are you wanting health and wellness? Are you wanting strength, endurance? You know, where are you going with? And mostly, if they're just kind of wanting to look good in a bathing suit or whatever, I'll be like, hey, calorie deficit. That's as simple as it is. You know, X out your sugars, as much as he can. And if you're burning 2,500 calories a day, you know, only take in 2,000. Understand there's a process there. It's not going to be overnight. Is it the proper weight you want to lose takes time. But if they're wanting for more performance and fitness in their sport, you know, training for their sport, then I'll start tying into, okay, let's put in these formulas. Let's see your estimated heart rate, calories burn if you're just sitting on the couch. And then we're going to incorporate your macros, your amount of protein, fats, and carbs. And the biggest thing I try to tell everybody and even myself is get my right protein intake. You know, I think because that's the big part of you losing that right weight and actually having that energy to move forward. And then so many of them crash diets are, oh, man, no carbs. Well, God designed carbs for a reason. You know, we need that energy in our body. So balance your carbs around what workout you're doing, how busy you're going to be. You know, if you're going to turn around and have a big, heavy day or a busy day the next morning, yeah, go ahead, add some carbs that evening. But if you're going to have a pretty relaxed next morning or half day, I'd probably X out a little more carbs that evening and use them more in that morning. So it's just the more you look into it, structure it towards what their goals are. And then that's when they really start seeing the benefit of it all.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it starts just as simply as knowing the difference between a protein, a carb, and a fat, right? 4 calories in protein, 4 calories in a carb, yeah. 9 calories in fat. So, I mean, you can play with the numbers pretty good, but if you up your protein really high, especially if you bodybuild or do things like that, mm-hmm. the satiation effect you get from that's what's going to help you lose the weight. So
yeah.
I always start with protein, no matter what I'm doing or if people yeah. ask me.
And it's simple because 0.8 to 1.2 grams per body pound.
Yep.
You know, it's easy for somebody to be like, oh, I'm 180 pounds. Well, you're probably going to ballpark about 180 grams.
Yep. No, you know, absolutely.
And then your carbs and your fats are going to fluctuate if you're wanting to gain, maintain, or lose. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a lot easier. There's so many, well, I mean, not like where you're from or where you lived out there in Wyoming. It's mm-hmm. like you can't go to Chipotle and do your macros real quick. But if you live kind of close around here, it's like, dude, it's all at your fingertips.
Oh, I mean, shoot, you go to just about any restaurant anymore, then. It's kind of wrote out for you.
It is.
You know? And there's so many easy. Different apps on your phone now where you can just type in eggs or bacon or honey note or
yeah, what Fruit do you Loops use or whatever. MyFitnessPal or something?
Macros tax.
Yeah.
You know, and you just plug in what you like, and if it meets your macros, it tells you if you go over or go under. And I mean, it's simple. There's just a process and dedication you got to put to it.
You ever been the guy who carries the food scale around?
No. Pocket? No. Now, if I pull my trailer around, like normally we'd be starting Fort Worth tonight, And I'd have my scale in there. But, you know, I've done it long enough now to where I can eyeball a lot of stuff, you know, especially I know what I like and know what makes me feel good, knows what gives me my energy. So I have it if I need it for something new, but I can pretty much eyeball for me anymore.
Yeah, man, you get to that point. I mean, you've been in the sport a long time, and I guess the biggest thing that you have to consider as you get older and it's like, well, what kind of longevity do I have? And mm-hmm. and that's probably the number one thing, the fitness journey that you've been on and the health thing is you gain so much more time in your sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people maybe realize that. They probably do now, but.
I think, you've seen as well as I've, you know, evolved in rodeo. You're starting to see the majority of your athletes, whether time event or rough stock in, are starting to put in that type of time and dedication before they ever even enter that arena. So your longevity is going to be there, whether you're training your animal athlete or yourself. So I think that's huge in not only your performance, but how long you're going to actually be able to compete in this sport, but compete at an elite level.
Oh, absolutely. Just like anything in life. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, that's totally true. You, I know you listen to some of the podcasts. Did you get a chance to listen to the Ryan Padone one yet?
I haven't. No, I seen some posts of that the other day, but I hadn't.
It's pretty wild because they were at the total 180 here, but it was in my head. they were up in Washington at the Capitol, mm-hmm. you know, U.S. Capitol and all that, and like it was so crazy because we were in here and she was making jokes like, oh, the FBI is going to come for me or whatever during the podcast. At the end of the podcast, and it's recorded out there, the FBI literally started blowing up her phone and was at her house.
Oh, snap.
Did you look into all that stuff much? I mean, it's hard not to, right?
I did a little, but for me on the politics and all the craziness going on, man, I've kind of stepped away from a lot of it because what's true and what's just out there, you know, you don't even really know. But if I get into it, I'll start looking into it because I had some family out there during it.
Oh, really? They went up there?
Yeah, and me and my buddy Harp, Nathan Harp, we were driving actually Odessa that Wednesday or whatever before the rodeo, and I kind of started hearing about that capital stuff, and so I called them like, what's going on? And I said, are you guys all right? And Nikki, she says, yeah, we're storming the Capitol. I was like, what? And she laughed, and no, we're back at the hotel or whatever. And so everybody that I've known out there, they're like, man, they're taking this a totally different direction than what happened. Everybody that I've known been out there like, man, we were praying, we were singing the national anthem. You know, it was a peaceful protest. Or not even a protest, it's just peaceful and patriotic is what it was, you know, and I'm just like, ah, so I kind of veer away from a lot of it and just stay away.
You have to, because once it hooks you in, like, everything in your life goes miserable for a while until you get away from it.
Yeah, did you see this? This is happening? Oh, did the world come to an end? You know, like, come on, you know, use your head a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, what people don't understand, and I always wonder, and not to drag you into politics, but it's just like it's right in your face nonstop, and I'm that guy, like, I don't know about you. Do you ever listen to the radio?
Not much anymore. I just tune into my music and podcasts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about it.
So, you know, when you're like, you get out of your truck, you get back in, like your Bluetooth connects or whatever. I drive this little truck around town, and I've got another truck. And like, if you bounce between the trucks, like your Bluetooth will leave. And somehow my radio got stuck on like Rush Limbaugh, just randomly. I don't even know how. And I haven't turned it off in like 3 months. So if I don't have my Bluetooth on, it's like Rush Limbaugh going bonkers.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I just have a hard time seeing our country completely collapsing no matter who's in power. There's just too much going on.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what you think about all that, but
yeah, it's just it's a crazy time, man, you know. But like I said, I've just kind of kept to what I know the truth is, and you know, I'm a faith-based man, so you know, that's where I kind of look for my guidance and wisdom, and you know, kind of stay true to that and just try to be positive about everything, you know. Know the rights, knows the wrongs, and just say, you know what, you know, good, something good's gonna come out of this, and I'm just, you know, gonna keep believing that. Even with rodeos, you know, some are going, some are canceling, and you know, it's put some people in some tough situations in the rodeo world, and I hate that. I hate seeing people have to go through some of that suffering, but you know, just, you know, keep your chin up, keep working hard, stay humble, and keep hustling. You know, that's kind of my motto, and that's what I'm gonna keep doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what rodeo is all about. Got to think that 2021 is going to be better because some rodeos haven't canceled. They've kind of made some adjustments like San Antonio and things like that. But I don't think Calgary's announced that they're shutting down either.
No, like, so for me, like, Fort Worth, they canceled, and Tucson, so my next 6 weeks are open as of right now. And then Houston, they moved to March, or from March to May.
Yep.
And so right now my March is kind of open. So hopefully some stuff will come about. You know, something's good is going to happen, or there's going to be a reason that I'm not going somewhere. You know,
right.
I always try to have that mentality, but right now I'm kind of taking advantage of, for 13, 14 years, I've never had hardly any time in my winter run. It's usually Odessa straight to Fort Worth, 3 or 4 days, Tucson straight into Houston.
Yep.
And I love snowboarding, and so we went once already. We're going to go again here in about a week, and just going to shred some powder.
Where do you like to go?
Anyway, where there's good powder.
Yeah. So just like the state of Colorado.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I've hit a few. Like, I grew up in Wyoming, so I grew up in high school and that around like 3 or 4 resorts. So
yeah,
we went shoot about every weekend in high school.
And oh yeah.
And
yeah,
I started rodeoing thing. And getting busy with that. I'd maybe get one run in, you know, one trip in a year. And so this year I want to try to.
Do you go to Jackson Hole a bunch?
We went there a couple times, and then when I lived in Idaho, so Grand Targhee, which is on the other side, basically, of the Tetons, pretty similar mountains. So some really good runs, really good terrain, really good powder, and, yeah, I'll go wherever.
Yeah, dude, yeah, that's one of those things, too, like, you get stuck and addicted to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you move to Texas, and it's like, you can't.
Yeah, but, no, I was like, man, normally it's 60 miles to a ski resort. Now I'm like, man, I actually got to plan a day of travel to get to where I want to go. You know, it's eight hours, you know, but it is what it is.
It's that has changed so much. You used to be able to get like a pass for like $500 for the year, and now it's like $300-$400 to go one day. It's crazy.
Yeah, they're making some money out of it.
I'm saying, I don't even know what it costs to like rent a whole deal anymore if you have to rent stuff, but it's a different deal. What was it called? It was called the Colorado Pass or something, and you could like take a bus from where I live, get up to the mountain, and you'd be there within like an hour and a half or so. And I mean, you just have your pass that you bought at the grocery store for the whole year. You could go pretty much anywhere from Vail to Steamboat to Keystone to all those places. And you just hop on a RTD bus. I don't have those in Wyoming, but they do in Colorado. You like to hunt too, don't you?
Yeah. big into hunting and just outdoor living and on the mountain country and that. So that's another one of my hobbies. I'd love to just be paid to hunt. That'd be pretty awesome. But
dude, I mean, that's also a thing that's going on a lot right now. We have a lot of big time hunting people on this show, because I like to make sure that we try to talk about that stuff, because I love that too. And what part of Oklahoma? You might have told me.
Pretty central, east of Purcell. So about 30 minutes southeast of Norman.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know Oklahoma that well. My sister lives in Nevada. That's what I know. And I know where Oklahoma City is.
Yeah, north. What is that? Northwest-ish.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's surprising. People who haven't spent a lot of time in that area, it's like super pretty out there. There's where they live in Nevada, I've never seen so many deer anywhere, period, in my entire life. Like, they're just everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Oklahoma's got a lot of deer.
They do. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're tiny little dinks, but they've got some big ones. I mean, as far as racks go running around up there, but it's like in that area, there's more deer than there probably are people in like a 10 square miles. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
There's like 150 deer that like one was in their garage, three were sleeping in the arena, they're in the freaking barn, everywhere, getting into the hay.
Oh, yeah.
But do you have pigs where you're at?
Yeah, I've got a lot of hogs. That's kind of what I did this spring. Is a buddy of mine, they own a hog hunting place, Hog Wild, just west of Purcell there. Mm. And so we trapped a bunch of hogs in my place and took them over there. And I mean, after my summer run this year, I got home and I had about 2 or 3 days to get ready for lotting. And so I'm running around cleaning the trees up, mowing my lawn and everything. And I just happened to look over behind my pool there, and there's like 40 hogs in my lawn. And I'm like, you dirty, rotten sucker, just tearing up everything. And so I'll get a little target practice, a little animal management from time to time. But
they're nasty suckers, too.
Oh, yeah, they're destructive. They just tear up everything.
Yeah, people don't realize how destructive they are.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, you got, what was it, 3 hours to get home?
Or? Yeah, about 2.5 from here. Really? It's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. No. Appreciate you stopping by, and look forward to seeing you, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the rodeo.
Yeah, it'll be different, but it'll be a good year, and we're looking forward to the rest of it. So,
hell yeah. Oh, brother, let's go down. This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content produced by Riley Chone. Our theme song is by Shay Ashire and the Night Howlers. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you guys next time.